What's going on, guys? It is a Monday afternoon. I am the Solomonster here with you the day after Forbidden Door. Last night was Swerve Strickland's first title defense in the main event on pay-per-view against the man who honestly feels like the heir apparent in this company. This is the guy that they are going to anoint at some point in the not-too-distant future. He is going to be the guy. And Will Ospreay has felt that way since day one when he signed that full-time contract and he came into the company. It may not happen this year at Wembley. In fact, it looks unlikely that that is going to happen at Wembley Stadium this year. But Ospreay is a future world champion in this company. I think everybody understands that. Everybody agrees with that. Swerve Strickland needed this win last night. He needed this win a hell of a lot more than Will Ospreay did. Yeah, he won the title back in April. His first pay-per-view title defense came not in the main event, but it came at Double or Nothing against Christian Cage. And I love Christian Cage, and I thought they had a very good match, but it wasn't the main event. It wasn't what that event was built around. So Swerve needed a match like this, where it was all about him. The focus was on him and Will Ospreay as the main event on this show. And this was the victory that he needed over a man who has been unbeatable since day one. This was the unbeatable Will Ospreay. This man has been undefeated since signing a full-time deal with AEW. He came into the company. He's been riding a wave of momentum. This is the man who beat Bryan Danielson. This is the man who won the international title. This is the man who, up until this point, has won every single match that he has had. And here he suffers his first defeat in what is easily a match of the year contender. And now it is on to Wembley Stadium for Swerve as the AEW champion against whoever wins the Owen Hart tournament, because we are in the middle of the men's and women's Owen. We're going to get more matches on TV this week. Come next week, AEW is going to be traveling up north. They're going to Calgary. And we are going to have the finals of the men's and women's tournaments. We're going to find out in short order who the number one contender is going to be for the AEW world title. We're going to find out on Wednesday who the wild card is, the wild card entrant that the Young Bucks have handpicked to wrestle Jeff Jarrett. That match is going to be taking place on Dynamite. It's probably going to be Hangman Adam Page. The main event for All In is very likely going to be Swerve Strickland defending against his old rival. It all started last year, go all the way back to WrestleDream, with Swerve and Hangman. But not for the championship one-on-one. This would be different in that way. It's probably going to be Hangman. There is another wild card here, no pun intended. We have the actual wild card. And then the wild card is Bryan Danielson. Because without knowing who that mystery man is going to be, right now the favorite in the Owen is Bryan Danielson. I think for a lot of people, he would be considered the sentimental favorite. I think there are a lot of people hoping that before he calls it quits on his full-time career in a few months, that he will have a quick run, maybe a token run, a token win as the AEW world champion. And, you know, Tony Khan has shown in the past, like with Sting, that he lives for the moment, and he's all about giving these legends their flowers and giving them their big moments, and Sting got to go out as a champion. Maybe he wants to send Bryan Danielson off the same way. It's always possible. Bryan Danielson could very well be in the main event at Wembley Stadium this year and get that shot. For Will Ospreay, who I thought was a shoo-in for the main event this year in London, his path runs through MJF, who had a good match on this show last night. Nothing spectacular, nothing that anybody is going to be talking about, honestly. It was a good match. We get great matches on television. We get great matches like they're candy, handed out by Tony Khan every week. I was expecting more, hoping for more out of what we would get from MJF on this first show back. Long Island, he's right in his backyard. We didn't get that last night, but that match, the main event that we had last night, was incredible. And that match, coupled with the Owen Hart match with Bryan Danielson and Shingo Takagi, those were really the highlights of the show. That and the return of Britt Baker, DMD, after nearly a year since her last match. She has not wrestled a match since September of last year. We got to see her make an appearance after Mercedes Moné became a double champion in her match, clearly setting the stage for another big match at Wembley Stadium. On the whole, this was the weakest of all three Forbidden Door shows Funny enough, even though I thought overall it was the weakest show, it had the best main event of any of these three shows. And that includes last year's first time ever match between Bryan Danielson and Okada. And nobody was looking forward more to that match than I was. And not that it was a bad match. They had a better match at the Tokyo Dome this year. But even better than that, this was the best main event of all three Forbidden Door shows, with a crowd that was hot for it from start to finish. And I think that's a real credit to both men in the match. You know, when you go into a show like this with 15 matches, if you're in the building and you're there from start to finish, you know, not everybody watches the pre-show unless you're there in the building, and you sit through 15 matches. That's a long show. I don't care what promotion it is. I don't care how great the matches are. 15 matches is a lot. And you could sense in some of the matches there was a little bit of fatigue from the crowd. To sit through that many matches, they were up and they were alive and they were into every single thing that these two men did in that main event. It's a tough spot for them to be in after 11 o'clock at night with everybody having seen 14 matches before that. But that's a credit, I think, to both men that were in that match. We're going to go through the entire thing here. This is your AEW Forbidden Door 2024 review. I am the Solemn Monster. There were 14 matches coming into this show, including the 0 hour. They added a 15th match. I thought I was seeing things. 14 was a lot. And then I see Serpentico coming to the ring. Like, what? Is this a dark match that's accidentally being shown on the air? They added a 15th match to this card. I couldn't believe it. I don't know why I was so shocked, but I couldn't believe it. And they came out because there were still people filing into the building, so these two had to go out there and wrestle. Half the building was empty. They were wrestling in front of a lot of empty seats. But we had Kyle Fletcher beating Serpentico. Then we got the House of Black, Private Party, Tomohiro Ishii and Kyle O'Reilly, and Gabe Kidd and Roderick Strong in a four-way. Malachi Black and Brody King winning the match for the House of Black after King dropped Isaiah Cassidy with a gonzo bomb. Brody King got dropped on his head during this match at one point as well, and according to Tony Khan, he's okay. I mean, that can mean any number of things, so he's alive. I guess that's good. But hopefully he wasn't shaken up too badly. There were some scary moments on this show. This was hardly the only one. Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe against Willow Nightingale and Tam Nakano. They didn't give too much away here with Stat and Willow because they have their match coming up this week in the Owen Hart semifinals. Nakano got a straitjacket German into a pin on Watanabe to win it for her and Nightingale. As I figured, you know, when I did my predictions yesterday, I said Willow's team is going to get the win here because I have every expectation that Chris Statlander is going to the finals, likely against Mariah May in the Owen Hart tournament. And speaking of which, we had Mariah May one-on-one in a quarterfinal round match in the Owen against Saraya. This was a rematch from their match on TV a few weeks ago where Saraya beat her. They had a decent match here, I thought. It's a win for Mariah May, one with a roll-up into a flash pin. So she gets her win back over Saraya. That vaults her into the next round where she will be taking on Hikaru Shida. That'll be coming up. I don't know that that has been announced for Dynamite. Because I have a Dynamite lineup, we'll get into that later. So that might be Collision, or that could be, well, I guess it would have to be Collision, if not Wednesday, because the finals are the following week. So it's going to have to be Wednesday or Saturday. I guess there's always Friday, but I won't be tuned into that. And then we had Mystico and the Lucha Bros against Titan, Yota Tsuji, and Hiromu Takahashi. You had AEW, New Japan, and CMLL all represented in this match. Chris Jericho, by the way, he attacked Mystico at the CMLL show a few days ago. And on commentary, they all but said that these two are going to end up having a singles match. I don't know when. They didn't say. Maybe Jericho can go on excursion. Maybe Tony Khan can send Chris Jericho on excursion to Mexico. Maybe 6 months. He could have a nice run there. I hear they can use some trees down there. Please and thank you. Titan got taken down with the La Mystica, tapped out to give the win to Mystico, Penta, and Rey Fénix. So that was 0 hour, four matches. Actually, Well, no, five matches. Right. Because we had to get Serpentigo on the show. That led into the main card. Opened with MJF in his hometown, taking on Hechicero. That makes back-to-back matches on Long Island for MJF. The last one was in Nassau Coliseum at the end of last year when he came out of it a loser to Samoa Joe. I was disappointed when they announced this because I was hoping that we would get somebody, not that Hechicero is a bad wrestler, but again, we get great wrestlers on television every week on these shows. I mean, it's kind of funny that I'm sitting here reviewing a show called Forbidden Door when every single week in the lead up to this show, we had matches that were involving New Japan talent or CMLL talent or Stardom talent. Every week is the Forbidden Door. That's why the Forbidden Door doesn't, while it's still a very good show, it doesn't have that same aura to it that it did at the very beginning. It was a novelty. You know, it was something that we were not accustomed to seeing. And that's what made it cool. But now we get it every week. So this year, it was not just New Japan talent. They added talent from a couple of other promotions, which was nice. But I'm thinking about it. I'm like, you know, we got Forbidden Door every single week in the month of June leading up to Forbidden Door. So while I knew this was going to be a very good match, when they announced MJF's opponent, I was let down. I was hoping for something more for his first pay-per-view match back. Even the match with Roosh on TV a few weeks ago, and I've read different things about how politically Roosh couldn't be on the show, and that's why they did the match on TV. Otherwise, maybe it would have happened here. And he would have been a fine opponent because we've had Roosh on the AEW roster for a while now. He's an established name there, and Roosh is excellent. Roosh is fantastic. So we ended up with this instead. It was all, you know, to get MJF a win. I get that, you know, kind of get him back to his winning ways here and reestablish him, but still disappointing. So Hechicero focused in on the previously injured arm of MJF, who made a one-arm comeback, hit a Panama Sunrise that Taz called a plain view sunset, and then a brainbuster for the win. The brainbuster looks to be his new finish. He used the same move to put away Roosh a few weeks ago. Solid match. Nothing blow away here from these two. Again, the match with Roosh, and now this one. They're using it to reestablish MJF. I still think it's ridiculous that he didn't, you know, argue for being in the Owen. I honestly don't know how you square that, but I guess just don't draw any attention to it and don't bring it up, I guess. If he wasn't going to win, they didn't want him in it, I guess. I don't know, but it's still ridiculous. So now the question is, what do you do with MJF going forward? And it's pretty clear that MJF and Will Ospreay, especially if you watch the show on Wednesday, MJF and Ospreay is going to be the direction. Is Daniel Garcia going to be a part of that? Because he was a presence on this show later on. I mean, not much of one, but he was there. He's going to be on TV this week. He's going to be wrestling Will Ospreay. MJF flat out challenged him to a match at Wembley Stadium and said, look, I have seen enough in you and I've seen enough growth out of you in these last 6 months that I'm going to lay it all out for you, you and me, one-on-one, Wembley Stadium. And you know, I stifled my laugh at first. And then I said, there's no way that MJF and Daniel Garcia is going to be your number two match at Wembley Stadium in front of 50,000 people, right? It's just not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that he wouldn't be involved in some way, and they might kind of work him in and do some sort of three-way with him and Ospreay and MJF, but that's not the way to go here, you know? I look at Daniel Garcia as a means to an end to get us to where we need to be with MJF and Will Ospreay. He is now part of this story, but that's all he is. He's a piece. He's a part of this story to get us to the bigger match, which is MJF and Ospreay one-on-one. And that's your number two match on that card. Whatever the world championship match is, right behind that would be MJF and Will Ospreay. Not MJF and Daniel Garcia. I mean, don't make me laugh. We had Kazuchika Okada and the Young Bucks against Hiroshi Tanahashi and the Acclaimed. We got an extended rap from Max Caster, which was actually one of the better ones that I've heard him do. Okada teased wanting Tanahashi at the beginning of the match, so Tanahashi tagged in, and we got a brief stare down, and then Okada quickly tagged out. Got great heat for it. He's so good at this. He's so good. There was some light chance for CM Punk when the Bucks were on offense. They got drowned out by chance of he got fired. After a series of reversals by the Acclaimed and the Bucks, all four men were down. That left Tanahashi and Okada to go at it for the first time in an AEW ring. Tanahashi hit his somersault senton out of the corner, followed by a dragon screw into a clover leaf. Nick broke it up. Caster flew in with a sling blade. Bowens countered a rainmaker into the arrival. Caster hit a mic drop. As Tanahashi went for the high fly flow, you had Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson outside the ring on either side, grabbing his feet to prevent him from hitting the move. So the Acclaimed ended up breaking that up. Tanahashi went for the high fly flow anyway, and Okada got the knees up on the way down. Okada did the Rainmaker pose fake out into flipping everybody off, which will never get old to me. Tanahashi countered a Rainmaker into a small package for two, but then ran into a picture-perfect dropkick by Okada, and the Rainmaker connected right after that. Okada pins Tanahashi to win it for the Elite. After the match, Okada wanted another Rainmaker. Billy Gunn came to his aid. He sprints down to the ring, makes the save for Tanahashi, so it feels like they're building to an Okada-Billy Gunn match, and the fact that I'm even sitting here right now saying these words in 2024 is just mind-boggling to me, but it looks like that may be a TV match we get very soon with Billy Gunn and Kazuchika Okada. You know, Tanahashi is older, and it's painful to see him walk to the ring and move around with those knees. I want him to find Rey Mysterio's doctor and go down to South America and just get millions of stem cells injected into his knees and see if maybe he can move around a little bit better, because Rey Mysterio, I thought he was washed in 2010. And whatever he did, here he is in 2024, and Rey, at almost 50 years old, is still going strong. So whatever he did, I don't know what kind of voodoo witch doctor he may have seen or what, but we got to get Tanahashi over to him. So while it is painful to see Tanahashi moving around on those knees, it never gets old seeing him and Okada in the ring together, just knowing the history between them and the great battles they've had before. It's still fun to see them mix it up in the ring. I thought the match was fun. The Acclaimed, they still have a guaranteed tag team title match against the Bucks after winning the Eliminator a few weeks ago. We don't know when that match is going to be taking place, but they still have that win in their back pocket. Then we had Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon. We had Dragon against Dragon here. Bryan Danielson one-on-one with Shingo Takagi, opening round match in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. It didn't take very long for Nigel McGuinness. Now, there was no Tony Schiavone tonight. I think it was Wednesday. He was on the show, and then towards the end, he kind of disappeared. And he went on social media after, I think it was Wednesday, and he said that he had lost his voice. I assume that's why he wasn't on the show last night, because I just realized there was no Tony Schiavone. So I am assuming he is still recovering from losing his voice. But we had Nigel McGuinness for pretty much the entire show, and Nigel is great. It did not take very long once Danielson came out for the insults to begin. Brittle Brian, he loves calling him Brittle Brian. He was healing on Danielson for the entire match. He's been healing on him all year. This is the match coming into this show that I was looking forward to the most, and they did not disappoint. I can't call it the match of the night. It was not the match of the night, but it is the one that I was most looking forward to. There was a spot early on where Shingo caught Danielson doing a suicide dive. So he dives out of the ring, and he catches him and sets basically picks him up in a suplex position, sets his feet on the apron, and gave him sort of a twisting, swinging neck breaker. Dropped him right on his head. And the doctor rushes over, and the referee, Aubrey Edwards, rushes over. It looked gnarly. It was very scary. It was clearly a planned spot, because it was incorporated into the story of the match for the remainder of the match. And it will likely factor into the remainder of the tournament, as they talk about whether or not Brian's body can hold up to the rigors of the remaining matches of this tournament. Because whoever was going to win this match was going on to wrestle Pac on Dynamite this Wednesday. There was a pumping bomber in the corner by Shingo that led to a huge superplex. Danielson avoided the Made in Japan. He got turned inside out, though, on a lariat. Shingo followed up with the Made in Japan. Danielson managed to kick out. Takagi signaled for the end. He looked for the Last of the Dragon. Danielson collapsed, so Shingo fired off some anvil elbows. Danielson, though, countered a sliding lariat into an attempt at a lapel lock, and Shingo rolled out. Danielson hit the Busaiku knee. Shingo kicked out, and then Danielson ended up winning by verbal submission, we were told, by wrenching Shingo's arm back at a very ugly angle. He had no place to go. Anybody in that position would have done the same thing, so we got the verbal tap out, basically, and Bryan Danielson advances to the next round. This is the first great match of the night, and the first match of any real significance on this show. Not the first time these two have been in the ring together. They had one match previously in Dragon Gate USA. That was back in 2010. They are two very different performers now, both veterans of the ring. They've been doing this for a long time. Shingo, one of the best in the world. Danielson has been one of the best in the world for almost his entire career. For being honest, they've named awards after this man. So you put these two in the ring together and you are in for, at worst, a very good match. And at best, it could be a match of the year. But this was excellent. I very much enjoyed this. It was hard hitting. They told a story with Shingo focusing on Danielson's head and his neck. The only negative, there was no drama regarding the finish. I don't think anybody expected Shingo to go on to the next round, let alone win the tournament. So you knew he was getting bounced right out of this thing. So there really was no drama, for me anyway, for the near falls. And you know Danielson's at least going all the way to the finals, if not winning. And again, he could win the entire thing, depending on who the wild card is. It's I would say wild card number one, Danielson number two. That's it. It's one or the other. Jeff Jarrett is not winning the tournament. I don't care how people thought that great segment a few weeks ago was so emotional where he talked about his relationship with Owen and what it would mean to him to go on to win the entire thing. You know, great. That's fantastic. It was a great segment. He's not winning shit. And neither is Pac or anybody else. Comes down to those two, whoever the wild card is. The way Nigel continues to talk about Danielson, I just think it would be such a shame if we don't get that match. If this really is the end for Danielson, like as far as full-time, and this is our last chance to get it, because I thought we were going to get it last year. There were reports that Nigel, he had gotten himself into the best shape he had been in a while. I mean, he's medically clear. There's nothing stopping him from wrestling. And I think had Bryan not been hurt going into that show, we would have had it last year. Ever since then, and I think this is why, because they knew, okay, we can always run it back next year. And so let's keep up with Nigel just needling him on commentary every single week, every single time he's out there. He's been like Bobby Heenan on commentary talking about Hulk Hogan. That's what Nigel has been to Bryan Danielson now for almost a year. It would be a shame if they don't do that match in London. If ever Nigel was going to come back for one return match, this is it. So I'll be disappointed. I'd rather see him and Nigel than have Danielson go to the finals of the Owen. You know, Danielson has done interviews in the past week saying he doesn't want to be world champion. And he doesn't think his body could hold up to being in a pay-per-view main event. And I'm sure, you know, look, he's had a lot of injuries in his time in AEW. He's had a lot of injuries in his career. If that's how he honestly feels, I don't think that this is a case where, like with Sting, Tony Khan should feel like, well, we have to do something. We have to honor Bryan Danielson. We'll have to put him in the main event. Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be a great match if you do it, but I'd rather see him and Nigel, personally. But you know what else I'd rather see? I'd rather see Bryan Danielson against Pac than almost anything else, and we're going to get that match on Wednesday, and that match is going to be fucking great. Toni Storm against Mina Shirakawa for the AEW Women's World Championship, the battle for the heart of Mariah May. Mariah was already in the ring, gave flowers to each woman before the match, and then she was conflicted. She turned to Tony, she turned to Mina, conflicted about which corner she would be in, so instead, she left the ring and she stood by the announce desk. She stood in a neutral corner to watch the match. Mina has really grown on me over these last several weeks, and not just because she's beautiful and very bouncy. She's got a charisma about her that just makes her fun to watch. And anytime, even when she's cutting a promo, or, you know, again, there's like the post-match and she'll grab the champagne and celebrate with Mariah, whatever it is. I've really enjoyed her. I mean, I hope we get to see more of her. I don't know if it's just going to be right back to Japan and that's it. Hopefully we get to see more of her, though, in the future. She got a lot of offense in here. She worked over Tony's knee, even got the old Bret Hart figure four around the ring post spot. She got an avalanche DDT off the top rope and then an education DDT, only got two out of it. Tony made a comeback. Mina spun out of a Storm Zero attempt, connected with her glamorous driver. Storm kicked out. She tried for another driver. Tony escaped, spiked her with Storm Zero, and pinned her to retain the title. I thought this was a really good match. Unfortunately, the crowd wasn't as with it as you would hope for the entire... I mean, they were in spots. But I actually thought this was one of the better title defenses that Tony has had during this run that she's been on. No big developments here with Mariah May. That'll come after she wins the Owen. And the stage, though, is set for Mariah May to challenge Toni Storm. It's going to happen. It's preordained. It's going to happen at Wembley Stadium this year. Again, the outcome here was never in doubt, kind of like in the Shingo match. Although we did get some convincing near falls. After it was over, Mina, we didn't know what was going to happen here. Mina wanted a handshake. And so Toni gave it to her, and Mariah then wanted them to hug, and so they did. And then Mariah got them all to do a triple kiss spot. So they all kissed on the lips at the exact same time, which brought Nigel McGuinness to tears. This man, he was standing up at the announce desk, applauding, pouting. He had tears in his eyes. They told him to sit down. This man is fantastic. Nigel has, I mean, in this role, Nigel has grown into one of the best announcers in any promotion. Nigel is fantastic. Again, he's one of those guys who I look at and I go, how did WWE let him go? How did they let him go? I say, every time I see Samoa Joe, fired twice. How? It just boggles the mind. At least with him, I know he had some injuries. Even still, it's Samoa Joe. How do you let someone like that go? We had Orange Cassidy one-on-one with Zack Sabre Jr. Up to this point, AEW had won every single one of its matches. That finally changed here. More mat-based than any of the other matches on this show, including the Danielson match. And with Zack Sabre in there, of course, no surprise. Cassidy tried a mousetrap. Sabre countered into a submission that saw him tie up both of Cassidy's legs, and he wrenched on both arms at the same time, and that caused Cassidy to verbally submit, our second verbal submission on this show. Cassidy, you know, he tried to keep up with Sabre's style. I thought he did a fine job. I don't know how Sabre comes up with half the holds that he does in these matches. They look painful. That's the thing about a Zack Sabre Jr. match. There are some people who like the flashier style. You know, in an AEW, you get a mix of different styles. They have a lot of lucha talent. They have talent from Japan, from all over the world. And then you have, you know, younger guys who are always doing these big spots and these dives and these flips and everything else. And then you have guys that are more mat-based. And that could be boring sometimes. I could be watching a mat-based match with two really good pro wrestlers and be fucking bored. Sabre is an interesting case because, again, I see him doing things in a match and I'll sit here and cringe because I'm like, fuck, you know, how do you do that without hurting the other person? It just, I love that it looks brutal and you can believe that the other person is in agonizing pain and they have no choice but to submit. You know, he'll tie up your arms, your legs, he'll twist you up into a pretzel. You know, he's very innovative in that way, but I just like that it looks painful. One of my pet peeves about wrestling, really always, but especially today, there will be certain, you know, wrestlers that will wrestle a certain way or they'll use a certain move, and it just doesn't look, it doesn't look devastating. And I'm like, am I supposed to buy into the fact that this person is using that as a finishing maneuver, or that the other person is supposed to be devastated by their offense? And it bugs me. You know, it's like, come on, at least make it look devastating. At least make it look like the other person is actually, you know, in trouble and suffering damage. I don't have to worry about that in a Zack Sabre Jr. match. I don't think there's anybody in wrestling today who's better at that than Sabre. So a good match here. Not as fun as Cassidy's match of Forbidden Door, the first one with Will Ospreay. But I still thought it was a good match. And then we had the learning tree. Yeah, the Rock sharpshooter. You know, I wasn't thinking about that, but that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. As great as The Rock is, you would think, dude, you're a Bret Hart guy, right? Bret was very kind to him when he first came in and mentored him in some ways and taught him a lot. And you're going to use his hold and you're going to disgrace the sharpshooter in this way. He had a horrible sharpshooter. I think if I remember, he used one at WrestleMania this year that I think was actually really good. If I remember, I think he actually sat back on it this year. So, and he hasn't wrestled in how many years? He finally got the hang of it. But for so many years, it's like he would have this expression on his face where he looked like he was in more pain than the person who was in the hold. It's shit like that that I'm talking about. Speaking of pain, the Learning Tree was up next. We had Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Jeff Cobb, the New Japan Television Champion, against Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata. Before the bell even rang to start the match, we had chants throughout the UBS Arena, "Please retire." And they were not addressed to Samoa Joe or Shibata. So Jericho got on the microphone. He said, "I know you really don't want me to retire because I'm from Long Island. This is my hometown." Because he was born in Manhasset. Grew up in Winnipeg. But he was, technically he was. He was born in New York. So we got some meat madness. We had meat chance when Samoa Joe and Jeff Cobb got in the ring. That was good. Hook got worked over for a while. And also he took Cobb over at one point with a T-bone suplex late in the match. But Jericho was there to catch Hook in a codebreaker. Jericho waved to the crowd, allowing Hook to sink in Red Rum. Jericho got out of it, ran right into a Judas effect by Hook. And Hook pinned the FTW champion to win it for his team. Taz, of course, on commentary, he was a proud papa. He stood up, big smile on his face. You'll see Taz smile very often. He's not really a smiling type, but he was smiling here and very happy to see his son pick up the win. I like that they had Hook beat Jericho with Jericho's own move on the one hand. On the other hand, we still have to get another FTW title match, because you would think now that's setting up for an FTW title match between the two of them. But on Dynamite on Wednesday, they spent one entire segment promoting a match for the FTW title between Chris Jericho and Minoru Suzuki that I thought was going to replace this match and take place at Forbidden Door. And I know Suzuki is not, you know, part of New Japan anymore, but I thought they were going to do the match on this show. There was no mention of it. And they didn't mention anything for Wednesday either. So I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know if we're going to get that match or not. We still have to get that, I would think, before we get a rematch between Hook and Jericho. But, you know, this is a great example here. On a show with 15 matches, 10, if you just count the main card, and even 10, that's a lot. This match did not need to be on this show. This match could have been a television trios match on Dynamite or Collision. Did this really need to be on this show? No, it did not. And it seemed to me like when it was over, as quickly as they cut away from this in the post-match, at that point they may have realized, okay, we're going a little long here. So let's move it along to the next segment. We had a ladder match for the vacant TNT Championship with Jack Perry, Konosuke Takeshita, Mark Briscoe, Dante Martin, Leo Rush, and El Fantasmo. This was your usual ladder match chaos. So if you like that, if that's the sort of thing you're looking for with the big spots and the car crash type spots, you got what you wanted here. For me, the highlight was Konosuke Takeshita for a couple of reasons. Number one, there was a spot where he executed, I think it was on ELP, a Blue Thunderbomb off the apron, threw two tables on the floor, and the tables exploded upon impact. That was awesome. But the story here was Takeshita for another reason, especially as the match went on. These fans in the UBS Arena were fully behind Konosuke Takeshita. Now, Takeshita's a heel. Takeshita is managed by Don Callis, who's probably the biggest heel in the entire company. Don Callis is one of the biggest heels in wrestling right now, period. And yet these people were fully behind. Every time Takeshita was starting to climb, right, they would get loud and they would root for him. They wanted to see him win the title, even though you would think they wouldn't. So I hope that Tony Khan was listening to that and paying attention, and that going forward, we'll get Takeshita involved in something other than just walking out here and there with Don Callis. I'm not saying that they need to turn him babyface right away. I mean, he's going to end up being a babyface when he breaks away from Callis at some point anyway. But I hope he was paying very close attention to the way the fans were reacting to him here in this match. Takeshita went to go climb the ladder, but Briscoe cut him off with a J-driller onto a ladder that was kind of propped up in the corner. It was like propped up on the bottom rope or the middle rope. Briscoe started to climb. Jack Perry met him with a ladder shot to the ribs, and then a series of chair shots to the back. Perry climbed the ladder. He pulled down the title to become the new TNT champion. This was the least surprising outcome of any match on this entire show. It was always the plan, I believe, that had Adam Copeland not gotten hurt and broke his leg, it would have been Copeland one-on-one with Jack Perry on this show. And Jack Perry would have beaten Adam Copeland. He would have gotten that rub by beating Copeland to win the TNT title. Instead, they had to go the six-man route, and we got the crazy match and the crazy spots. And he climbed the ladder and he pulled the title down. We all got to the same place regardless, but he was always going to win the TNT title. He was always the one that made the most sense. If you were going to take a younger, homegrown, original AEW talent and have them go over on Adam Copeland, have Copeland put them over, Jack Perry was the one that made sense. He's part of the elite, right? They're all in right now on the Jack Perry push. He went away for a while, right? He paid his penance. He came back. He joined the elite. He beat Bryan Danielson to win Anarchy in the Arena. And now he's the TNT champion. Brings more gold into the elite. They already have the tag team titles. They have the Continental title. Now they have the TNT title as well. Is this going to make the elite angle any better? No. Not going to change a damn thing as far as the angle is concerned. I think they're drowning right now. I mean, as an angle, it's fine, but it's not what Tony Khan, I think, envisioned that it would be, that they can build their entire summer around this, almost like a hostile takeover, you know, of his company by the elite. It hasn't worked. And I don't know anybody who is seriously looking at this group as any kind of serious threat. But if they want to push Jack Perry and want to help get him over, they're doing all the right things right now. You know, they've got all their eggs in that basket. They're putting him over strong. They're having him win big matches. If that's their goal here, is to get over Jack Perry, and maybe one day he could be a main eventer in this company, then they're checking all the boxes. You know, they're making all the moves you would expect them to make. As far as multi-man ladder matches go, this one was really no different than the gazillion other ones that we see. I mean, it was better than the one we got at, you know, NXT Battleground with the women last month. Yeah, this was a lot better than that one. But there's a sameness to them all. I don't know that this one was any more or less special than any of those. At this point in the show, though, it was that shot of adrenaline that I think this show needed. It did get the crowd up. Leo Rush, by the way, he was banged up pretty badly coming out of this match. I don't know that he's necessarily injured, but there was an announcement from Beyond Wrestling that he had to pull out of his booking for July 4th. So he will not be on that show. And that's a direct result of him being banged up here in this match. Hopefully he's okay. Because that's the other thing, you know, you watch these matches, and they're always trying to one-up each other. You know, they're always trying to one-up themselves. They're trying to one-up each other and do something crazier than the last guy and crazier than the spot that came before them. And invariably, people get hurt. You know, those ladders fucking hurt. Whether it's thrown at your head, whether you get put through one. You know, I mean, it's just, and you're doing spots from the top of the ladder. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong. I find myself watching these matches And I'm just sort of wincing and hoping, like, oh man, you know, that looked pretty brutal. You know, I hope he's okay. And I'm sure they're going to wake up in the morning and feel it. But you hope that they come out of it without any serious injuries. And injuries are the last thing that Tony Khan needs. If there's one thing that has fucked up his plans more than anything else over the past year, it is injuries. So much so that when he was doing an interview the other day with Meltzer and Alvarez, the subject of injuries actually came up. And he floated the idea that maybe they should do some sort of injury update report show, you know, like for social media, and be a little more open about injuries and who's hurt, what the injury is, how far along they are in their rehab. Some people may not want that information out there. Some people like to keep their medical stuff private. They don't want people to know about their injuries. We still have no fucking idea what's wrong with Jamie Hayter. She's been out for a year. No clue. No clue what the injury was. No clue where she is in her recovery. So that's one example. I would imagine the reason for that is because she doesn't want it out there. She hasn't even been on social media in a year. She just disappeared. But for the people who don't mind it, that could be an interesting concept. It would be nice to have a little more clarity on some of these injuries and know, okay, what's the nature of the injury and when can we expect this person to come back? I like the idea. But up next, we had a winner-take-all, title-for-title, champion-versus-champion match, Mercedes Moné, the AEW TBS champion, against Stephanie Vacker, the New Japan Strong Women's Champion and the CMLL Women's World Champion. That title was not on the line. Their first match last year in the tournament to crown a first-ever Strong Women's Champion was very good. It was shorter than this one, but it was a very good match. I can't say this one was better. There were a few rough spots. There was one, there was a backslide spot where they both fell down. I'm not even sure what they were trying to do. They still had a good match, though. I just don't think it was as good as their first one. Vacker, though, she was really impressive here. You know, more than Mercedes. The crowd reaction was the most interesting part of this. Because as the match went on, the crowd was firmly behind Stephanie. I mentioned the crowd reaction to Takeshita in the ladder match. Crowd was firmly behind Stephanie. They wanted her to win that TBS title. And there were chants of fuck the Celtics. There was a guy in the crowd wearing a Boston Celtics uniform. Of course, Mercedes is from Boston. She was at a Celtics game there towards the end of the season and was, you know, promoting it. Then there were chants of fuck the Red Sox. So was it just the case of the New York fans heeling on her because she's from Boston? I'm sure that was a big part of it. I don't know that that was the only reason. But I'm sure that was a big part of it. Look, this woman was born a heel. The CEO gimmick that she has right now, it's a heel gimmick. It's not a babyface gimmick. She should be a heel. I think she understands that. I think Tony Khan does too, especially based on her reaction to what happened at the end of this match. But it was really noticeable as far as the crowd support for Stephanie late in the match. Mercedes escaped a crossface and got one of her own locked on, and the crowd booed. And then she hit multiple backstabbers, and the crowd booed even louder. Then she missed the frog splash. We got some violent knees from Vacker and a Meteora in the corner. Mercedes finally hit her moneymaker finish and again went for the crossface, and Vacker tapped out. And so Mercedes Moné is now a double champion. I guess Stephanie was already a double champion. Now Mercedes is a double champion. She's got the TBS title. She has the New Japan Strong Women's title. That title was meant for her. Had she not broken her ankle in the match with Willow last year, she was going to win that match. New Japan wanted her to be the first person to hold that title. So it took a year. Well, it took 13 months. Here we are 13 months later. They finally got what they wanted. And she has the lavender belt. I thought that this was very good. Again, I think the first match they had was better. I still think it was a very good match. I hope we get to see more of Stephanie, though, in the future, because she's very good. After the match, Mercedes is in the ring, and she's celebrating with both of her belts when Britt Baker's music hits, and out comes the Good Doctor. She walks out onto the stage. She looked fantastic. I know she's been doing some work with DDP, and you could tell. She looked in tremendous shape. They shot off some pyro. She turned around and she walked right back through the tunnel to the back. And that was it. We didn't get anything in the ring. We didn't get any physicality between them. We have not seen Britt Baker in the ring in an actual match since September of last year. And I don't remember the last time she even made an appearance on TV. I don't know that she's made any appearances on TV this year. Because I know for a while, I think she was still around, but she wasn't doing much. And again, Jamie Hayter at that point wasn't even around. So maybe we haven't seen her since last fall. It's been a long time. You know, she had some really bad back issues. But the last time we saw her, she was a fan favorite. And that's what she was in the UBS arena here. And that it looks like that's what she'll be going forward. Mercedes, though, I said that I think they have an understanding that she should be a heel. She was standing in the ring. And as everybody is cheering for Britt Baker and they're very happy to see Britt, they show Mercedes and she's got a big puss on her face. And she's clutching her belt. You know, it wasn't like she had a look on her face, like a smile, like, oh, you know, welcome back. You know, I can't wait to wrestle you. She had this look on her face like, what are you doing interrupting me? And in fact, after the show, in the scrum, she was asked about Britt Baker's appearance. And Mercedes said that a certain bitch wanted to steal her spotlight and there would be a price to pay for interrupting her. So that's the setup right there for your match at Wembley. Yeah, I was wondering, who are they going to put Mercedes in the ring with on that show? Now we have our answer. The match for Wembley at All In is going to be Mercedes defending the TBS title against Britt Baker. I'm not going to lie, I was waiting for Jamie Hayter to walk out through the other tunnel. You know, I still look at them like they're attached at the hip. And Britt was standing there for a few seconds where nothing was happening. And I'm like, wait, are we getting somebody out of the other tunnel? And nobody came out. I was hopeful that maybe Jamie would come out too, but she didn't. And actually, Mercedes and Jamie would be an even better match. But great return for Britt Baker. Great reaction for her return. And good to have her back. It's another big name they get back in that women's division. And now it sets up for a first time ever match. Yeah, she's one of those opponents we've never seen Mercedes work with before. She's been the face of the AEW women's division from day one. Who are the people that AEW positioned in all of the photo shoots and all of the materials, promotional materials they put out when Dynamite first started back in 2019? Britt Baker and Nyla Rose. She's been the face of that division since day one. And now her and Mercedes at Wembley in front of all those people, that's a big match for Tony Khan to be able to do. Then we got some news. They aired a promo video for Wrestle Kingdom, which is coming to the Tokyo Dome on January 4th, as it does every year. But they have added a new event.
I'm the lady tree.
Oh, no.
Thanks, guys.
Look who it is. The Learning Tree is here to teach us something. And there he goes. There goes the Learning Tree. They have added a new event to the lineup. Not only are we getting the Tokyo Dome show on January 4th, we're getting Wrestle Kingdom. But they have added a new show called Wrestle Dynasty. So AEW has its own Dynasty show. Now New Japan does as well. Actually, if you remember, New Japan was going to run a show called Dynasty at Madison Square Garden. That was going to be a big deal for them. They were going to run Dynasty at MSG, and then COVID hit. And COVID fucked it all up. And now their business is so weak compared to what it was back then. There's no way that New Japan can run a Madison Square Garden show now. I mean, they would have to partner up with AEW to do it. Then they could probably pull it off. New Japan is not in the position that it was in 5 or 6 years ago. But there was going to be a Madison Square Garden show called Dynasty. It never happened. So now we're getting Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th, 2025. So they're doing it back-to-back, both shows in the Tokyo Dome, the big difference being Wrestle Dynasty will be a combination of New Japan, AEW, Ring of Honor, CMLL, and Stardom talent. Basically, translated, it's the New Japan version of Forbidden Door. Only it'll be in the Tokyo Dome. So that is coming up on January 4th and 5th, 2025. Jim Ross, good old JR, joined the announced team for the final two matches. It was good to see him there. He was back in the hospital last week. He was having breathing problems. For those who don't know, JR was in the hospital for several weeks recently. I think it was some kind of pneumonia or flu that he got, and it really wreaked havoc on him and his lungs. He got out of the hospital. He ended up back in the hospital for a few days. But he vowed that he would be there at the UBS Arena for Forbidden Door, and he was. He was originally supposed to be doing commentary as well for Double or Nothing, but he was, again, he was hospitalized. But there he was, and he looked good. He sounded good. I would say, as JR appearances go, he was on his A game last night. So that was very nice to see. We had Jon Moxley one-on-one with Tetsuya Naito for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Naito, coming into this match, said that if he lost to Moxley, he would surrender his spot in this year's G1 Climax to him. And Tony Khan is not going to lose Jon Moxley for a month. Right? It's one thing for him to send Eddie Kingston over to Japan last year for 4 weeks. He's not sending Jon Moxley over there for a month, heading into All In, of all things, right? Their biggest show of the year. So Naito saying that, it's the equivalent of you have a title match, and then completely unnecessarily you add another just needless stipulation where the challenger says that if I don't win the title, I'll leave forever, you know? And it's like, why? Why would you add that and give the finish away? I felt like this gave the finish away. Now, I was expecting a title change anyway, but that just solidified it, put the stamp on it. Like, okay, this guy is losing here. This was disappointing. I wanted to like this match. I thought this was very disappointing. This was the most disappointing match on the entire show. And it got the appropriate crowd reaction. These people were a lot quieter for this than you would hope for, especially for an IWGP title match. Jon Moxley, one of the biggest stars, one of the most protected stars in this entire company. And it got a mostly quiet reaction. I don't know if Naito on some spot in this match got his bell rung. I don't know what was going on with him. He looked off. Now, I know he's not the same performer he was even 5 years ago. He's older, he's beat up, he's had some injuries, as a lot of these New Japan guys have. It's probably why Nakamura left when he did. His body was already being beaten to shit. He goes, let me go work with WWE. I'll add years onto my career. It's no wonder he wants to stay there. He's already been there 8 years. He's never leaving. He would have been done a long time ago if he would have kept wrestling that style. Naito has been in some wars. He's had some knee injuries. He's had, you know, issues with his eyes. Had surgery on his eye a few times. So I know he's not the same performer that he used to be. But again, I don't know if it was just an off night or what. It kind of fell apart at the finish. I don't know what happened there. But, you know, he's in the G1. And so he's got that grueling G1 schedule coming up in these next few weeks. So I hope he's ready for that. Moxley tried applying a rear naked choke. Naito countered into a Destino. Naito tried another one. This time Moxley turned him into a paradigm shift. So they are slugging back and forth. Moxley turns him inside out with a lariat. He follows with a Death Rider. Gets a very, almost too close of a near fall. So much so that Taz is openly questioning Red Shoes Uno on the count. And saying, I think it was three. And Moxley gets up in Red Shoes' face. Moxley grabs a chair. Red Shoes takes it away from him before Moxley could hit a Death Rider onto the chair. Naito seemingly counters a Death Rider attempt into what the announcers tried to say was a version of a Destino. Now, I went back and I watched it. I watched the show on YouTube, thankfully. Fuck Bleacher Report. I haven't used Bleacher Report in 2 months. I've never been happier. They've been making the pay-per-views accessible via YouTube and Triller in a million different ways. I've been ordering the pay-per-views on YouTube. The only knock against it is that in 2 weeks it expires. I think on Triller you could always go back and rewatch these things. I'm not going back and rewatching this show in 2 weeks, so I don't give a shit. I might go back and rewatch parts of it the next day. So YouTube has been fantastic for me, just FYI. Fuck Bleacher Report. But I went back and I watched this a couple of different times to try to figure out exactly what happened here or what they were going for. The announcer said that it was a version of a Destino that he reversed into. It really wasn't. They just sort of awkwardly fell down next to Moxley, did Naito. Naito followed that with a brain buster that he barely got him up for. And then he hit a proper Destino to win back the IWGP World Heavyweight title. Not good. Not good. So Moxley got his two-month run with the IWGP belt. He will always be able to say that he was an IWGP champion. Now, his name is in the record books. Good for him. Looking back on it, it didn't do a damn thing for New Japan business. I think they were kind of hoping it would help with ticket sales for some of their shows. I don't believe it did. I mean, it certainly didn't do anything for their, live event business in Japan. So I don't know that that really accomplished what they were hoping for it to accomplish. Nor did he put over, in the end, any of their up-and-coming potential main event guys. You know, when he won the title from Naito in April, I thought, well, he might drop it at Forbidden Door. Maybe he'll drop it to a Shota Umino or a Yota Tsuji. These are guys that are being prepped and primed to be in the spots that were previously occupied by people like Okada and Tanahashi and, you know, Jay White and Will Ospreay. And think of all the talent, Kota Ibushi, that they've lost at the top of their card in the main event picture. They need to replenish, you know, their top of the card. These are the guys that are likely future IWGP champions. And so I thought, okay, maybe they're going to crown one of these guys as champion and have them beat Jon Moxley. Instead, they just had Moxley drop the belt right back to Naito. And Naito looks like he's in pretty rough shape. Naito doesn't look like he's in a position right now to do much of anything. So, but they protected Moxley in that they gave him an out with red shoes on that close near fall. Or even the announcers were like, yeah, I'm not too sure about that, but okay, there's nothing we can do about it. So they gave him that out. But yeah, no, this was very disappointing. I'll tell you what was not disappointing was the main event of this show. For the AEW World Championship, Swerve Strickland defending against the AEW International Champion, Will Ospreay. I would argue the best in the world right now. Ospreay comes out honoring the late Hayabusa with his entrance video and the mask that he was wearing. He dedicated the match to his grandmother, who recently passed away. Swerve came out. He was wearing special gear. It resembled more of boxing trunks than wrestling trunks. He was introduced out onto the stage by not Prince Nana, but by Jim Jones, who is a famous rap artist. I don't know that he's famous for anything recently. But he was at one time. And so they get in the ring, and they had the two ring announcers. So you had Justin Roberts doing the introductions, and then you had the New Japan ring announcer, even though there was no New Japan talent in this match. But you have the double intros for every match on this show, and the reactions that these guys got. This had a big fight feel. This is the kind of big fight feel you would hope that your main event would have. This match had that. We got a stalemate after some quick moves at the beginning, back and forth. That got them a standing ovation. Both men went for their signature moves, missing the hidden blade, missing the house call kick. Ospreay connected with the Styles Clash. As he went for the Os Cutter, Swerve followed him, and he sprung off the ropes at the exact same time that Ospreay came off the ropes, and he swerve stomped him in midair. I mean, that's the sort of thing, you got to time that perfectly. And Swerve is obviously fantastic at what he does. Ospreay, same thing. So he timed it perfectly, and it looked great. I've never seen that before. They showed Daniel Garcia, by the way. He was sitting up in one of the boxes watching the match. At another point during the match, they showed MJF watching in the back. Later on, Swerve was setting up for a Swerve stomp, but Ospreay rolled out to the floor. Swerve didn't care. He was on the top rope. He came off the top rope anyway. And he delivered a swerve stomp from the top onto Ospreay up against the announce desk. And the table did not break. They knocked some shit down, but the table did not break. And I actually think that only made it look that much more impactful and that much more unpleasant for Will Ospreay, the fact that the table didn't break. It's like if you try to pile drive someone on top of the announce desk. I remember this happened in the street fight that Triple H and Cactus Jack had at the Royal Rumble, where Foley gave him a pile driver on top of the announce desk, and it didn't break. And I'm like, ooh. That's got to suck. Actually, hurts more probably than if the table had broken. So Swerve then gave him a pile driver, speaking of pile drivers, on top of the barricade at ringside, the top part of the barricade, gave him a pile driver. Ospreay, though, rallied. A little while later, he attempted a hidden blade. Strickland got his forearms up to block it. Ospreay teased the Tiger Driver 91, only to hit a Stormbreaker instead. Got a near fall out of that. The Tiger Driver, of course, being the move that he vowed he would never do again because it hurt Bryan Danielson in their last match. Strickland later countered another Tiger Driver attempt and hit his own hidden blade, but he missed a Swerve Stomp, and Ospreay nailed referee Paul Turner with the hidden blade instead. When Swerve moved out of the way, he wiped out the referee by accident. Strickland immediately hit a Poison Rana, but Ospreay followed that immediately with a hidden blade, and he knocked Swerve the fuck out. And so he had the visual pin. He covered him. There was no referee, but Ospreay had the visual pin. That's when Don Callis appeared, and you had to know that this was going to come. You had to know this was going to happen at some point because of the comments that Ospreay made coming into the match, where he said, you know, Swerve is like, you're going to have your friends help you out. And he said, I don't need them. I don't need their help. I don't want their help. And remember the reaction from Don Callis in the backstage area when he heard Swerve in the ring, or Ospreay say that. So you knew that he was going to play a role in this match in some form or fashion. He's also had a couple of conversations with Roosh about an opportunity that we don't know what that means, but that's going to also lead to something involving Ospreay. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Roosh get involved in some way in that international title match on Wednesday. You know, things may blow up on Dynamite this week. Callis is there, though, and he hands Ospreay the dreaded screwdriver of doom. See, the same screwdriver, we've seen that before. He's handed it to Takeshita and other people. And Ospreay was reluctant initially to use it. Then Prince Nana went over to Don Callis, and he gave Callis a shove. Shoved him right down on his ass. And Ospreay lost it, and he grabs Nana up against the ring post outside, and he has the screwdriver, and he's holding it up, and he's threatening him with this screwdriver. So then when he realizes what he's about to do here, he snaps out of it, and he throws it away. He goes back into the ring. Strickland hits a drive-by, which is the house call, and then he hits a Swerve Stomp and gets a very close near fall out of it after Aubrey Edwards runs out to make the count. Strickland immediately pulls off the arm snapper that he does, hits another house call, but Ospreay kicks out at the very last second. This was one near fall too many. If I had one critique here, that right there, that shouldn't have happened. I think they had one near fall too many in this match. Ospreay, by this point now, he gets back to his feet barely. He is staggering around. Okay, he looks like a drunk man trying to stand up on his 2 feet. He attempts a very weak hidden blade. It had nothing behind it. Swerve just sort of gently grabbed a hold of him, you know, like he felt sorry for the kid. Hits a house call kick, followed by big pressure, which is the JML driver. And he pins Will Ospreay to retain the AEW World Championship. Swerve showed respect to this man when this match was over. Ospreay was completely dejected, and Kyle Fletcher had come out to ringside, and he was there to console Ospreay. As Swerve celebrated the second biggest win of his entire career, second only to the title win over Samoa Joe at Dynasty. This was the biggest win outside of that in his entire career. This right here is the win that solidified him in the spot that he now finds himself in. It wasn't the match with Christian. It wasn't the defense on TV against Claudio. That was technically his first title defense. This match right here is what solidified him as the AEW World Champion. He needed this win more than Will Ospreay did. This was the greatest main event in the short history of Forbidden Door and one of the best matches all year. If I had one word to sum up this match, incredible. Whatever expectations I had for this match, they surpassed them. That's how great this match was. And the crowd was with them every step of the way, as late as it was. 14 matches in so far. This was number 15. The fans were with them. The fans were into every near fall, every big move, everything they did, the callous thing. Don't stab him with the screw. I mean, they were there every step of the way, and it made the match that much better. And Swerve said when the show was over in the scrum, he was asked if he felt like the match had delivered and met his expectations. And he said he goes by the crowd. It's not even so much whether he thinks he had a good match or not. If he can hear the crowd, though, reacting to it in the way that they want them to, then he knows, okay, this is going better than I thought. He didn't have to worry about that last night. Those fans in Long Island loved every second of this. And the story they told here. Remember the promo in the ring face-to-face they had a few weeks ago where Swerve said, you don't have the killer instinct to be in this spot. You don't have the killer instinct to be where I am and to be the AEW World Champion. And Will proved him right. That's the story. At one point, he had the chance to hit the Tiger Driver 91. He opted, instead of doing that, he did the Stormbreaker instead and didn't win with that. Don Callis comes out, hands him a screwdriver, referee is down. He could have stabbed this man. Couldn't do it. Couldn't bring himself to do it. He threw it away. He lacks the killer instinct to close the deal. He proved Swerve right. They protected Ospreay with the visual pin and the Callis involvement, but more so the visual pin. They gave that to him. And this was left open to a rematch because of that. This was left open to a rematch at some point. I would love to see this run back one more time. I don't know when or if it's going to happen. It's possible that Will, Swerve won't even be the champion by the time they're ready to run this thing back. I think if the match at Wembley is Swerve defending against Hangman, or if it's Swerve defending against Bryan Danielson, very good chance that Swerve Strickland is not only going to retain that title, but he'll be champion for the rest of the year. When I thought that they were going to do a two-match program here and they were going to rematch these two at Wembley, I said, he's dropping it at Wembley. Let him retain it at Forbidden Door, but he's going to drop it at Wembley. If he's not wrestling Ospreay, I don't think he'd take the title off Swerve. So it's entirely possible. If they circle back around to this in 6 months, Swerve is still the AEW World Champion, and then Will Ospreay potentially could beat him for the belt then. So I, whether it's for the title or not, though, I would love to see these two back in the ring together. I think they left it open for a second match. But this was everything I was hoping for out of this main event, and then some. And it capped off a strong show, hardly the must-see affair that a lot of these AEW pay-per-views are. I mean, there are pay-per-views they have done that'll just blow you away. And it's like, man, you got to go back and watch this, 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 and this. This was not that. It was a strong show, but it was nowhere near some of the best shows they've done. But if there was one match I would tell you to make sure you go check out, it is that main event. When people are putting their end of the year list together for matches of the year, this is going to be on a lot of people's list. This will be on my list for sure. Now, Dynamite this week, the day before July 4th, we're celebrating our independence this week. We have Dynamite on Wednesday, and it is the beach break edition of Dynamite. This is what we have on tap so far. Will Ospreay will defend the international title against Daniel Garcia. Owen Hart tournament quarterfinal match. Jeff Jarrett one-on-one against the wild card entry, as selected by the Young Bucks. My guess, the Cowboy is back. We already got a video for him on Collision. We already got a Hangman Page return vignette on Collision, so we know he's on his way back. I think he ends up being the wild card. Owen Hart, tournament 2 semifinal matches. Take a look at this. Pac one-on-one with Bryan Danielson. In the other one, Willow Nightingale one-on-one with Chris Statlander. So those are two very strong semifinal matches there. And Britt Baker said that she was going to save her speech for Dynamite. We will hear from Britt Baker live for the first time since her comeback on Dynamite this Friday, or Wednesday rather. And that should set things in motion for her and Mercedes Moné at All In. There are two polls I want to show you guys. I got two polls up last night. I asked you for your overall thoughts on Forbidden Door. And right now it is 54% thumbs up for this show, 27% thumbs in the middle, and just shy of 19% thumbs down for Forbidden Door. The other thing, though, I wanted to know is what you thought the match of the night was, which, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. Swerve Strickland against Will Ospreay, with over 1,600 votes in, sits atop the list here with almost 80% of the vote. 6% said Monet and Vacker. 4% said the TNT title ladder match. And 11.6% say Danielson and Shingo was the match of the night. Clearly, it was Will Ospreay against Swerve Strickland. I don't think there could be any serious debate about that. That match was excellent. All right, we got a few super chats here to get through. Nothing too strenuous. I thank you, those of you who have tuned in here. I appreciate you hanging out with me here on a Monday afternoon. I know some of you are probably on your lunch break. Some of you are probably at work. Instead of doing work, you are watching me. Your secret is safe with me. I won't tell on you. Ace of Masta last night dropped a $9.99 saying that Tony Storm, is better than the Bloodline. I don't know about that, but thank you, brother, for the $9.99. Jerome Eugenio with the $5. Stuck at work, will listen later and be joining everyone for the Raw review. Very cool. I will see you tonight then. That's where I will be. I'm going to be live yet again. Hey, David Theory with the $50 super chat. This man is just
yowie wowie
out of his mind here. David Thiering, thank you. He says, what's up, Solo? Not going to lie. I saw a 15-match AEW card, and I said, uh-oh. Has AEW learned something from Double or Nothing, and will this go beyond midnight Central Time? Turned out it got done at 11 p.m. Central Time. Maybe they learned some. They didn't learn anything. It ended at midnight Eastern. They didn't learn a damn thing. Why do you think I scheduled this stream for today? Because I knew exactly when the show was going to end. David, thank you. MGM Ballin, who became a channel member. Between SmackDown and Forbidden Door, I really spoiled myself. See, I misread that. I thought that said I really soiled myself. I said, don't get too excited there, MGM Ballin. No, he spoiled himself, not soiled himself. Amazing live experience. What a way to celebrate my last day of work on Friday and a new job. Well, MGM Ballin, congrats on the new gig. That's very cool. Don't get too excited, though. Don't soil yourself. Jessica Herman with the $5. Do you think that Hangman will take the title off of Swerve at All In, and then Ospreay eventually takes it off of Hangman? When, if so, keep going Solo. You know, I think if they do Swerve and Hangman, it's early yet, but I would still be in favor of Swerve likely holding on to the title. I feel like Swerve would probably win. I hate making a prediction this early. But my money would be on Swerve, though, in that match. Tyler Hansen with the 10 says, fantastic main event with a cinematic ending showing the by any means champion giving a pat of respect before dealing the kill shot to the chosen one. Haven't missed a pay-per-view or show review and don't plan to. Tyler, thank you for the love. I appreciate you always being here with me. Superman Bassfisher. Other than the main event, this sucked. The main event was easily the best thing on the entire show. Project Libertad, love how Forbidden Door makes all companies that work with AEW look like geeks. If wins and losses, AEW scored 9 wins and 2 losses against the other promotions. Well, look, what do you expect, man? They are the ones hosting the show. Of course, they're going to put themselves over. I thought it was funny because up until the Zack Sabre match, I mean, AEW had won every single one of the, you know, head-to-head matches. So I knew they were going to run the table, but I'm like, all right. Yeah, it's kind of like NXT working with TNA, and they had their champion beat the Knockouts champion, and then, so what did they give TNA in return? Tatum Paxley. And then I think it was on their most recent show, they sent more talent. It was Charlie Dempsey, and it was, I mean, come on, you know? Send some real names over there. But you can see who the dominant kind of partner in the relationship is there. You can see who's wearing the pants in that family. Brian H. DeGreenboy. I'm so happy for Swerve. I love the success that he is having, but damn, I wish Adam Cole and Malakai Black would both go back to WWE, since Triple H is in charge of creative now. I think with Malakai, you'll eventually get your wish, if I had to venture a guess. Oz and Glorious with the Learning Tree. Stephanie Vacker fucking rules. Thanks, guys. She's quite great. Project Libertad says, why did Moxley even win the title? Worst champion since Bob Sapp. Japanese fans say Tanahashi felt bad for Tony after that punk footage and Moxley losing a shoot grappling match to some random dude. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where that comes from, but it was as simple as New Japan thought that by putting their title on someone, you know, with a name like Moxley and putting it on an AEW star who would bring that title with them and who could headline some of their U.S. shows, I think they thought it would somehow help their business. I don't really think it did. I think it was worth taking the risk. I just think it to just put the belt back on Naito and not get anything out of it is kind of a waste when you could have tried to put somebody new over. I feel like Shota, unless they just think he's not ready yet for that spot, he's clearly being groomed for a top spot. Maybe they feel he's not ready yet, but I mean, the story was right there, you know, with the whole protege-mentor relationship between them. I mean, it was perfect, and they didn't go for it. Bobby's World says, you versus Goldberg in a retirement scaffold match is a Be the Booker all-timer, and it will go down in the history books. Thank you. Well, at least if I'm going to be written off for good, at least I know that people will always remember it. Yeah, that was quite the Be the Booker the other night. Get those likes up, by the way. Maybe we'll do some Be the Booker here in a little bit. We have Armando, who is very upset with me that I had an opinion on this show. Armando in the chat says, dude, why are you sort of down on the show? There was more than the main event to like. Shingo against Danielson, which, I mean, fuck me. I could have sworn I said I liked that match, but okay. Let's pretend I didn't. Orange Cassidy against Zack Sabre Jr., which was fine. I mean, it wasn't anything that I was terribly excited about, but it was fine. TNT ladder match. It was all right. It was a ladder match. And Tony against Mina. I thought Tony against Mina was a good match. I literally said that it was one of the better title defenses that she's had. That does not make this a blowaway 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 show. You know, if I had to put a score on this Forbidden Door show, I'd probably go maybe in like the 7.5 range, somewhere around there. If you thought every match was a fucking banger, congratulations. I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, but this is the problem with some of the AEW fans. They cannot take any degree of criticism. I don't really even think I criticized this show too terribly. You know, but you rank shows, people love to rank these things. Objectively, this was the weakest of all the Forbidden Door shows so far. There's only been three of them. This was the worst of the three. I didn't say that any of the three were fucking terrible. I just said it was the weakest of the three. It had the best main event out of the three. The main event blew everything else on the show out of the water, including Danielson and Shingo, which I really liked. But again, anything even remotely negative or critique anything on these shows and they take it as a personal offense. I mean, it's a real problem with some of the AEW fans. They can't accept criticism. They just can't do it. They just can't do it. It's a real problem I've noticed with some of their fans. Power Spy and Games. I will be it all in. I'll hate it if it ends at 11 p.m. Hey, you bought the ticket. So you know what to expect. You can't play stupid now. Jazz Jackrabbit. Missed hearing your voice, Solo. Been catching up as I have been touring Europe for 8 weeks. Skipped over all the Jericho segments, though. What did I miss? What did you miss? I mean, you've been gone for 8 weeks. You've missed a lot. Not with the Jericho stuff. With the Jericho stuff, you haven't missed anything. It's good to have you back, Jazz. Barry MK, pancakes or waffles? Pancakes all the way. I don't hate waffles. I love pancakes. Put some powdered sugar on top. Douse it in syrup. Ugh. I haven't had pancakes in a long time, but I'm a pancakes guy. Funny enough, the worst pancakes I ever had were at IHOP. Maybe it was just the one that I went to. We have like a local one that's not far from here. Fucking sucked. HBKC83. Quick WWE question. When it's all said and done, what will go down as the bigger pairing? Brock and Paul or Roman and Paul? You know, that's a good question because you asked me that question a year ago. I'm still sticking with Brock and Paul, but the longer this goes on for, I may have to say Roman and Paul. I mean, the way they've told this story is just so great. And we'll see what that next chapter is when Roman comes back. I assume it'll be Roman and Heyman. Hopefully Heyman doesn't turn on him because it just wouldn't make any sense. I still think, you know, Brock and Paul, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. You know, they were such a great pairing for so many years. It's hard, though. I still tend to lean towards them, but Roman and Paul, you know, it's getting to the point where, you know, they're kind of neck and neck, I feel like. David Thiering with another $50 Gunther bomb. Says, progress solo was the point of my earlier super chat. Obviously, we can agree the pay-per-views are still too long, but in my opinion, ending at 11 Central is at least better than ending after midnight Central. Yeah, but my question is, when was there ever an AEW pay-per-view that ended at 1 in the morning? I don't remember that. I think the latest an AEW pay-per-view went was maybe 12:15. I don't think there ever has been, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think there ever has been one that went that late. So I just didn't know what you were talking about, but thank you. David's going to be with us for the Raw review later. You know, Issa, I've been thinking about you a lot since WrestleMania. I promise you that box of tissues, you never took me up on my offer. I was very offended, but I let it go. And I know Issa has been in mourning since WrestleMania 40, when Roman lost his title. And nobody is looking more forward to his return than her. So that's going to be a big day for her when that finally happens. But I've been worried about you. You know, she's been in this big funk. She can't get out of it. Tried to tell her. I tried to warn you what was going to happen. You didn't listen to me. I don't know what else I can do. Justin G, hear me out. The AEW all-nighter live on pay-per-view. Yeah, count me out. Did Double or Nothing go after 12:30? I don't remember that. I thought it went like 12:15. Who knows? These shows are too fucking long. Uffman Entertainment, Stephanie. Es absolutamente hermosa. Espero que podamos ver más de ella pronto en AEW. Gracias muy bien. Gracias muy buen. I think you meant muy bien. I'm actually going to correct you. Uffman, I don't know what you said, but Stephanie is great. I think that was basically what he said. I think translated, that's what he said. Stephanie Vacker is great. Armando, I know. See, Armando makes a good point. Armando says, I'm a wrestling fan. I need something to bitch about. I know. I don't think any of us would be wrestling fans if we weren't here to bitch about something. Armando is always welcome. Look at this. Do I see prayer emojis for NYC Demon Diva? We have a prayer circle going on for Issa where we are praying for the prompt return of Roman Reigns so that she can get back to her old self. Says, bro, if Solo is correcting your Spanish, You messed up. He says that's what he meant. He says that's what he meant. Okay. I thought you meant muy bien. He says muy buen. Okay. All right. I thought it was muy bien. Favorite Metallica song, says Bobby's World. Enter Sandman. Enter Sandman. See, if I say Saint Anger, I think I'll anger a lot of people. So, no, I mean, it's Enter Sandman or The Unforgiven. I think it's one of those two. Jeremy Rose, Hangman is winning the AEW title. Elite is going to have all the gold. That's what I think the purpose of the angle is, and I hate that. Yeah, I hate that too, which is why I really don't want to see that. Casey is Raw. Do you think the AEW product is down because Tony is focused on making the deal with Time Warner Discover? No. No, I would hope Tony Khan, he can walk and chew gum at the same time. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. Doesn't explain why their numbers are down from last year. Has nothing to do with the negotiations. Jermaine Blackwood. Does Tony Khan forget that the 2023 Owen winners, Adam Cole and Britt Baker, got title shots at last year's Wembley All In? This isn't a new concept, AEW. They did not win last year. The 2023 Owen winners were Ricky Starks and Willow Nightingale. You're thinking of 2022. This is year three. And Uffman Entertainment, thank you, my good sir, equals gracias, mi buen señor, in Spanish. I see. I stand corrected. There you go. See, that's what happens when I try to correct someone's Spanish. Thank you, guys. See, I've just... Who needs Duolingo when I have Uffman Entertainment to correct me on all my mistakes? We are currently sitting at 450-plus likes. I thank you for that. Please continue to hit that like button. It does help out the video. Let us go ahead. Power Spying, though, coming in with a super chat here. What flag is that? Is that it? That's not Italy. The Belgium? Belgium just scored 1-0 in the UEFA Euros. I don't know whose flag that is. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Uffman is my learning tree. Oh, it's France. It shows you how up I am on what's going on. It's France. Okay. Oh, it's France and Belgium. Oh, I was right. Okay. I was right. I just got the flags mixed up. It was Belgium. France and Belgium. France scored. See, I'm not a total moron. All right. You're getting a rare Be the Booker here at 1:45 in the afternoon. Doesn't usually happen very often, but here we go. We begin with the Spirit Squad, former tag team champions. Take a look at some of these faces here. Look at that guy all the way on the right. And that guy second from the left. He's currently one of the producers behind the scenes in WWE. The Spirit Squad. Going to be taking on Kane and The Undertaker. I would love to see Kane and The Undertaker demolish the Spirit Squad. But I feel like that would be a squash match on TV. Not exactly the kind of marquee match I'm trying to book. So, we continue on. We continue on in the Women's Be the Booker with Ivory. How many of you remember Ivory? I remember when Ivory first got brought in. She was with D'Lo Brown. Then she joined the Right to Censor. Ivory, though, I mean, Ivory goes back to the Glow days. She's been around for a while. All right, Ivory going to go one-on-one with Asuka. nobody is ready for Asuka. Unfortunately, Asuka, according to Fightful, is going to be out for the rest of the year. She just had knee surgery. I don't know what kind of knee surgery. That sounds like an ACL to me, but she is going to be out likely into 2025. So we are not going to be seeing her for a while, unfortunately. But I like that match. Ivory could go, and so could Asuka. And now we come to our main event of the, not evening, but the afternoon. We might actually be doing Be the Booker twice today. If you guys can like the video later enough times, we might actually do this twice in one day. Okay, here we go. We begin with the man himself, brother. Hollywood Hulk Hogan is kicking us off. Very appropriate in the main event, because where else would he be? He would not be wrestling anything but the main event. So we have got Hollywood Hogan in Be the Booker stepping into the ring with who? Who will it be? Kazuchika Okada. Wow, what a fucking match. Hollywood Hogan and Okada. It's not going to end well for Okada. That's the only thing. He's got creative control. The Japanese star is not going over on Hulk Hogan. Unfortunately, Okada is going to have to do the job to the big boot and the leg drop, and that don't work for me, but he's got creative control. It's in his contract. Nothing I can do about it, but what a match. What a fucking match. Japan Hogan. Now, this is not Japan Hogan. This is Hollywood Hogan. Big difference. There's a big difference between those two. We got some more super chats here before we get out of here. Unless you guys want to keep me around. Here we go. Let's see. We have got Uffman Entertainment with the $15 super chat. On that note, he says, Bienvenido al Arbol del... I don't know what the hell that says. Gracias, chicos. I'm not even going to attempt to read that word because I don't know what it says. But thank you, Uffman. Marcus M. says, best movie / TV show you've watched recently. There is a show on Netflix called Berlin, which is a spinoff show. It's actually a prequel show with a character called Berlin from the show Money Heist. It's a Spanish language show. I watch it with the English subtitles, but in Spanish, because that's the way you should always watch these things. Money Heist, if you've never seen Money Heist, I think the actual name is La Casa de Papel, is a great show. You should really watch that first. Berlin is like a prequel series to it, and I just finished the first season. It's already been renewed for a season two. I enjoyed it. But again, I would watch Money Heist before I watch Berlin. Bare Ass Gorilla with the $10 says, I was listening to the sound off at work, and by chance, I heard you would be live right now. Thank you for what you do. I'll catch this on Spotify when it is up. Thank you, Bare Ass Gorilla. David Thiering with the 10. A quick online search, Solo tells me Double or Nothing went 4.5 hours for the main card. Main card starting at 7 p.m., ending at 11:30 p.m., 12:30 Eastern, 11:30 Central. AEW pay-per-views are still too long, case in point. Yes, they are. MGM Ballin, they called you my good sir instead of saying very good sir. I have been schooled. And Bobby says, this is your promotion, Solo. Hogan has control over nothing. He's got creative control. What do you want from me? I mean, we have to honor. He wouldn't have signed with my promotion if he didn't get creative control. So we are assuming, we have to assume that Hogan has creative control. There's an assumption of it. Bobby's World says, that was Learning Tree in Spanish. Jericho does know Spanish. Well, yeah, I mean, he worked there for years. So, of course, he knows Spanish. He lived there and worked there for a while. El Corazón de León. I think the Spanish people miss him so much that I think he should go back there and stay there for a while. What do you think? I like that. I think he should go back to Mexico. I think he should hang out down there. They could build him a little villa. He can plant a tree. I think it's the right thing to do. Rican son. What's going on, man? I hope you're feeling better soon. He says he's not feeling well. He didn't know I was doing this. Well, that's why I let everybody know on the Sound Of yesterday that I was doing this. We'll see what happens for All In. Wembley, I'll probably just go live after that, but we'll see. We'll see if this becomes the norm. It's a lot easier just to do it the next day. It's so fucking late. Yeah, there's people downstairs. It's 12:30 in the morning. I'm first going live. I mean, who the fuck needs that? You know? I still didn't go to bed until 1:30, but I got more sleep than I would have if I would have stayed up reviewing this show. But anyway, again, it was a strong show. Although it was the weakest of the three Forbidden Doors, that main event was excellent. And you can vote in both polls. They're up on Twitter right now, at Solomonster is the place to go. If you missed episode 868, I lose track of how many of these I've done. If you missed 868, make sure you go check that out. That podcast, 2 hours long, it is up for you right now. You guys can go listen to that, and then I'm going to be live with you again in less than 24 hours because we got Monday Night Raw tonight, and we'll see what the follow-up is to the Wyatt 6. We got a huge qualifier for Money in the Bank coming up. Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, and Ilya Dragunov are going to be in the ring at the same time. Oh, happy day. I cannot wait to see that match, and I will be live with you as soon as Monday Night Raw is over. I'll see you guys tonight after Raw. Peace.